is the Davis and Beadle Podcast.
All right, it's time for the Davis and Beadle Podcast. I'm Davis, he's Beadle. The, I guess, record-breaking Davis and Beadle Podcast. I guess we are just breaking records the last podcast we did, according to Max Ryan from our radio station. Incredible numbers. Huge numbers.
Incredible numbers. Yeah, I'm giving all the credit to the Vig family.
We're
big
in South
Dakota. That's what I know.
I think that's probably the case. I think they probably all downloaded it so they could listen to us talk about Mark. Which I feel bad. He sent me a great like NCAA tournament question the other day, and I didn't answer his question. I feel bad. It was like a trivia question. I felt bad because I got sidetracked and
you left him hanging.
I did, and I suck. I suck.
What
I
think was
I
the did. Question?
Let me see. Let me see what it was here. I got to see if I can find it. Okay. You put me on the spot here, Beadle. Put me on the spot. And it was an NCAA tournament question. Oh, let's see. Where did it go?
We set the bar pretty high with our content. So, you know, we gotta keep it going here.
Okay, this is not the one. Okay, I'm still looking for it here. Still trying to find the text that he sent me. No, that's not it. It's an NCAA tournament question.
You have that many friends. No way.
No.
All those text messages you're scrolling through?
No, it's there's lots of ones that unfortunately I've not answered. That's the problem, I think, is that they're ones I haven't answered from people previously. So I think that's the issue. Oh, here's a question. Okay, I found it. The blue bloods of college basketball are North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, boo, Kentucky, and UCLA. Boo, Kentucky, because I'd have them the Final Four. Thanks, John Calipari. Those five programs have the most Final Four appearances of any program. Who are the next four programs with the most Final Four appearances?
Ooh, good question.
And I guess he puts this up like in the clubhouse. He has questions, trivia questions all the time.
And did you look that up?
I did not. No, I didn't.
Do you know the answer?
No, I don't.
So we're just guessing now this point?
I don't know.
Well, my guess would have been UCLA and UConn after that.
But UCLA's in the five.
Oh, they were. I didn't hear you say UCLA.
North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, UCLA. I think it got mixed in there with my booing Kansas.
Probably.
Or booing Kentucky, excuse me, because I had them in my final
Kentucky
four.
And Duke, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would go UConn after that, but I'm not sure. That's a pretty good question by Mr. Vig there.
It is a really good question. And I'm looking to see. I'm looking it up. I'm using the mighty Google machine to look it up and see.
Villanova and UConn. That would be my other guesses.
Let's see. Most Final Four appearances. It's giving me like everybody that's ever been in the Final Four.
Hey, what do you guys do on your podcast? We Google stuff.
We're like most podcasts. We just Google crap and talk about it.
You know how you sit around in your living room and thumb your phone and Google stuff? Yeah, we do that on our podcast.
Yeah, and so you should listen to us. Listen to us do stuff that you do in your living room. Okay, so this is
the reason we're breaking records.
Exactly. Because this is such scintillating crap that we're doing here. Okay, so according to what I'm looking at right now, since we feel compelled to answer Mark's question, as North Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA, which we talked about, Duke.
Of course.
Duke is Duke. Kansas, 15. Michigan State, Ohio State, 10 appearances. Ooh.
Wow.
So those two.
Yeah, I didn't think of Michigan State. That would be a good one. I wouldn't have guessed Ohio State. Michigan State should have guessed that.
Indiana, Louisville with 8 appearances.
Yeah, Louisville. And
you got five schools.
Fine program they are now.
With 6 appearances. Arkansas, Cincinnati, Michigan, Oklahoma State, Syracuse.
Wow. Man, I wasn't even close. I didn't get any of those.
And then there's 7 schools with 5 appearances. You mentioned UConn.
Okay.
Florida, Georgetown, Houston, Illinois, Oklahoma, Villanova.
Yeah, Florida was in my head too.
Yeah.
They went quite a few years in a row there for a little bit, but yeah. Well, pretty interesting. There's really only a select few when you break it down like that, like there's not very many programs that are in that position very often.
So we're now into the Sweet 16, and I've got three of my final four still in play. I've got North Carolina, Tennessee, which I have in my championship game. I've got North Carolina winning it, which makes Dave Fox, I think, very happy. Former Fruit of Monument basketball coach and baseball coach. And his son, Andy. They're probably very happy. And I also have Houston in my final four. I had stupidly put Kentucky. Why did I do that? I don't know. But anyway, did you do a bracket? And do you still, how many of your final four do you still have?
I did not do a bracket, which is wild because I had like three of them all. Pools with friends and coworkers and family and stuff like that. And then I got to like the day and I was like, oh shit, I missed it. I forgot to do this. So, I didn't do a bracket. If I would have, I probably would have had UConn for sure. I think they're the best team in the country.
Actually, I think still. I got UConn. I'm sorry. I got UConn, not Houston. I got UConn, North Carolina, Tennessee. I'm sorry.
I like Houston too. That Shed kid is a stud. Paul
Shed's a stud.
Yeah, I like him a lot. That's a good player, and guard play can just kind of carry you sometimes like that. So I like Houston as well. I don't know after that. I mean, I always vote for my Dukies, but they're just not that good. I don't think they're quite at that level this year. They're probably exactly where they should be, which is in the Sweet 16, and I expect them to probably not make it through that. So I'm not sure. I kind of like Gonzaga again, if we're being honest. They finally rounded into shape with some new guys mixed in with some of the returners they had.
Isn't one of those guys
my old friend Graham Ek?
That former Wyoming Cowboy. We actually talked with Tom Hudson on our local show today. Tom, the longtime voice of Gonzaga, used to do TV here for KJCT News 8. And this is their ninth straight trip to the Sweet 16. Think about that. I mean, this is for one time.
How to do it, right?
Yeah, and once upon a time, remember they were the little scrappy mid-major, and they've been a blue blood for a while now. But that's pretty impressive. Nine straight Sweet 16s for Mark Few. That's pretty good.
Well, when you think about some of the, I think that's coaching. I really do. Obviously, you got to get players, but once you're at the level that they're at now and have been for some time, you're going to get high quality players. So to me, it's coaching. Like there's guys out there that are just really, really good at game planning and getting their teams ready for tournament play. Mark Few is one of them. Tom Izzo is one of them. He's always been good at that. His teams, regardless of whether they were highly ranked or not, have always been really good at that.
Yeah, but I've got a problem.
Him was great at it.
I've got a problem I've developed problems with Izzo over the years with the whole Larry Nassar, Michigan State, sexual assault thing where he was trying to take, fire away from Michigan State and how they handled that and his own internal issues with his team and some stuff that went on there. And then the other day about, I think we need to look at dropping the automatic bursts for mid-majors. Really? I know that Greg Sankey and the SEC wants to do that because God knows we can't have enough of the SEC in the tournament. Come on. Tom Izzo is always like, I love the small schools. I love Division II. I just love it all. No, you don't. No, you don't, Tom Izzo.
You can hate Tom Izzo all you want.
Great coach.
I don't see what that has to do with whether he gets his teams ready for the tournament.
No, I just had to bitch about Tom Izzo for a minute. And his...
You were on a tangent there, dude. I struck a nerve. You were like,
I got to talk about Tom Izzo for a moment. Hold me back.
But yeah, I think there are coaches that are just good at the tournament.
He is good.
They understand it. And Mark Few's one of those, and that's where we start.
Yeah.
I like Gonzaga's chances to make it through. They have, really good guard play. They still have the Nembhard kid that's excellent. And when you add in a couple of big, DK isn't their only big that can do some damage. They look really, really good last week. So, I think they got a chance as well to make it through again this year. So
got to get past Purdue, though.
I don't think San Diego State will make it through this time. Obviously, if I think UConn's still pretty good, I don't think UConn or San Diego State quite has the horses that they had last year. They're close, but they're not quite as good as they were last year. But yeah, and then last one's Purdue, and that's got to be a Purdue-Gonzaga matchup here, and I think that'll be a great one, personally.
Yeah, Zach Edey's been unbelievable in this tournament, and we you know, back-to-back National Player of the Year. We kind of talked about him, though, on our show about, you know, at times he kind of disappears. For a guy 7-4, kind of disappears, but not in this tournament. He's averaging like 27 points per game, almost 18 rebounds. You know, you can tell he was mad about them going out in the first round last year. And yeah. And Gonzaga's already played Purdue out in Hawaii back in November, 10-point win. And one of the things that gave the Gonzaga the lead in that game, we talked with Tom today, was their three-point shooting. And Gonzaga right now is shooting like 50% from three-point range in the tournament. So this could be, you know, can they do that for the totality of the game coming up tomorrow? We're doing this on a Thursday, leading in the Sweet 16. If they can keep shooting it that way, they just might be able to get past Purdue. There's a decent chance, but they got to shoot the ball well from three-point range, and they can't let anybody else, like the Smith kid or anybody else outside of Zach Edey, go out and have a good game. Edie's going to get his. I mean, I think that's just kind of a given that he's going to get his, but you got to slow everybody else down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the impressive part about Purdue was the way they shot the ball, too. You know, Edie's been great, and you expect him to be very good. But, I mean, that Utah State game, they blew him out, and it wasn't just Edie. Like, they just shot the lights out of that in that game. They couldn't miss, and you know, if they're going to do that, you're not beating them. So they're going to have to play some defense on the perimeter with them too. And I think that's a good matchup. I think that's probably my favorite matchup of the weekend, or of the week, I should say, is that one right there. I think that'll be fun to watch.
All right. So let's move on to baseball today as we do this start of the Major League Baseball season. Oh, there was the Soul Series, with your Dodgers and the Padres.
What are you talking about? We already started. We're good.
That's the day. Come on, this today's opening day. Don't give me that stuff, Jack. This is opening day today, and yeah, so let's start out in the American League. Let's not even talk about home turf yet until, you know, we'll get to that with the Dodgers and the Rockies. So, in the American League, we had our predictions today. I really like the Baltimore Orioles. They added Corbin Burns to that rotation. You know, they've got to get some guys healthy like John Means, but with Rutschman, that group, that's a young team, but that is a team that to me, once again, is poised to win a division title in the East. Going to be a lot of competition, certainly with Soto now with the Yankees. That's going to be a great combination, Judge and him in that lineup, the Rays. They're always going to compete. And the Blue Jays have certainly talent with Vlad Jr., but, I like the Orioles, though. I just, you know, when I look at who's going to go to the World Series, I have Houston going there again out of the American League. What's that?
I'm hanging up.
Sorry, I know you don't like me saying that, but it's. I mean, the Astros, that lineup is still Altuve, Bregman. I know. They're, you know, with the whole sign stealing thing, kind of scumbags, but that's a talented line of scumbags, the lineup of scumbags. Jordan Alvarez, Framber Valdez. I mean, they're good. And I just feel like it's going to be Houston that gets to the World Series. What about you in the American League?
I love the Orioles. I think that they're poised to, you know, kind of just keep growing from what they did last year. Yeah, I know it was disappointing in the first round of the playoffs for them, but there's only one way to learn how to deal with that, and that's to go through it. And
I do have them in the American League Championship Series. I do have them playing the Astros in the ALCS.
I think it'll be dependent too on whether their whole bullpen gets and stays healthy. Because like you said, they have Corbin Burns. I like their rotation. Their offense is fantastic. So, you know, they're going to have a chance, I think, to just kind of run the show in the NL, or excuse me, AL East. I don't think the Yankees even hold a candle to them, to be honest with you. But we'll see. It's always hard to predict 100 and how many ever games, right? And understand that there can be injuries and there can be, there can be slumps and guys that just, you know, don't fit in the lineup the way you think they would and stuff like that. So it's hard, but I love the Orioles. I think they're really, really good again. You know, the Rangers though are still, they're
don't
still
count them too. Out. Do not count the Rangers out. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that lineup as well. And I think it's hard to come off of a World Series, especially your first one, and the attention and the expectations go through the roof. And I think that's hard. You make those long playoff runs and you cap it off with a win and you kind of lose your hunger after that. So we'll see how they handle that. But, you know, I'm with you. I think Houston's going to be good. I think the Rangers are going to be good. I don't know about the Rays. I think they're always there, but nobody knows why all the time. So I can't get behind them, but I really like the Orioles in the American League.
Yeah. With the Rangers, I think they are kind of, they're the wild card in this whole thing. They will be a wild card. And I they could be a wild card when it comes to maybe getting back there and winning it again. The Langford kid, the rookies, he's really good. The pitching that they have there with if, you know, Scherzer can stay healthy, DeGrom, once again, if he can stay healthy, they could be really good, but I think Baltimore and Houston are the two best teams in the American League. National League, I've got the Braves going to the World Series. Sorry, I know you're already upset at me about Baltimore. You're going to hang up again. But man, the Braves, with adding Chris Sale, who looked really good in spring training, and the bullpen, what they did with bringing in the Rockies' Pierce Johnson, they can obviously hit with the crap out of the baseball. Acuna Jr. and those guys, they had a record-tying 307 home runs, hit .501 slugging percentage last year, record-setting number in that department. I just, you know, your Dodgers are great. There's no doubt about it. But you have to admit, from a pitching standpoint, from a starting rotation standpoint, that is kind of they're going to score a buttload of runs with Mookie and Freddie and those guys and Shohei. But man, the pitching has to be a concern for you.
Yeah, well, I think the concern is who is it all going to be in the end, right? I think there's a lot of options, and they got a lot of guys that are either coming off injuries or, you know, didn't perform as well or are looking to step it up another notch, like Miller and those guys. But you know, you're right. They have an offense. When it comes to the Dodgers, so they'll hopefully allow them some leeway as a starting staff to figure out who's going to fit and fill all those pieces. You know, will Walker Buehler come back or not? I don't know, but if he does and he's, you know, what he was before, well, that's pretty damn good addition to your rotation in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that all transpires. Same with Dustin May and guys like that. How do those guys fit in? When do they fit in? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if they do either. I don't know if the Dodgers have many answers there either, but they're going to score. And I, you know, I agree with you. I think the Braves are probably still the team to beat. I'll buy Chris Sale when I see him make it through the season.
True. That's a valid point.
Just hasn't done it for so long. And he seems to be one of those guys that has a tendency to get hurt a lot. You know, he's absolutely filthy when he's healthy, but just hasn't been healthy much, and he's starting to get up there in age. But we'll see. You know, guys can you know, put together a whole season. If he does that, that's a huge pickup for them. So, you know, I think those are the two teams to beat for sure in the National League. But there's just questions around the Dodgers, and they aren't all about health. About a lot of other things that are going on right now. And I really don't understand all of that. It seems shady and it seems weird, but I don't know how that'll affect things for them or not. And it really could. I think it could be a real big pain in their buns here for a while, but I don't think, you know, those guys they're used to winning. They're used to having, you know, attention. So it may not affect them as much as you think it would with the whole Ohtani issue, but man, I don't know how it couldn't be somewhat of a shadow that's going on around there.
That's such a bizarre situation, such a mess right now.
I don't understand it very well. It's so many bits of information that are coming from all over the place, and none of it sounds right. Like none of it, but something in there has to be the truth, and I don't really get, you know, the whole gambling thing with these guys. You know, it's pretty explicit. You got to stay away from that stuff. And you're being paid handsomely to stay away from that stuff. Now, it also goes with the territory. Every league in the country and colleges on up are having, you know, marketing relationships with betting companies. So it's like, it almost goes with the territory that you're going to have some of these issues here and there. But I just don't understand if you're making that kind of money, why that would be something that you would be in any way associated with. And now I really don't understand whether he is or not. You know, it doesn't, yeah, it sure seems like he is, but no concrete evidence.
I tend to think that his interpreter, now former interpreter, I think they had a close relationship. I think he found a way to access Shohei's money, and I think that's kind of what happened. But I don't know. I don't know for certain. And there are people saying, well, how did he not know he was missing almost $5 million? Yeah. Well, because he doesn't keep track.
That's
you have agents and an accountant. Yeah, and you have an agent, yeah, you have an accountant or accountants. I mean, yeah. Shohei, yeah, Ohtani doesn't come home at night and go, honey, I'm home. I'm going to go into my office and start digging through the checkbook and making sure everything adds up. It's like, he doesn't do that. It's like when people say, how did he not know? Well, how did the Jacksonville Jaguars not know that one of their guys with a virtual credit card,
yeah,
spent $22 million? So people, shit happens, man. I tend to side with Shohei on this, that I think he got taken advantage of in some way. But I've got Houston
that way, but it just feels so shady, right?
Well, because he's so secretive. He's so, you know, yeah, he didn't want to tell us what his dog's name was. Like, and one day he just was suddenly married, you know, he's just going, okay, well, I guess he doesn't feel the need to share everything, and he doesn't have to, but yeah, like that's part of him being so secretive, I think, does not help in this whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. So I've got the Braves in Houston. I've got Braves actually winning it all. This year, we'll see how right I am. I'm not so sure. We'll see. I feel pretty good about the Braves this year, though. So the Rockies.
I'm waiting to see. Yeah, I was gonna say I'm waiting to see who the team that we don't know anything about right now is going to be that kind of jumps into the race this year. Is it going to be the Rockies? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
You never know.
You know, they for all that it's worth, they finished behind the Dodgers in Cactus League play. I mean, they had a good spring. Kyle Freeland looked like he's kind of turned things around, and our prediction, Bakota has them at 59 wins. I was a little more generous. I said 64, and I think Buckeye said some like 65 or something like that. And I don't know how good or how bad they're going to be. I have no idea. They've got young talent. Tovar, they just signed to the huge deal, $63.5 million deal, which I think is actually money well spent in the case of, yep, a guy like Tovar is only 22. He's not 35. Chris Bryant, who's actually not quite 35. But you know, I'd rather see them invest money in young guys and go that route than guys that probably have seen their best days. And hopefully Chris Bryant still has some good days, you know, left in him. But with Doyle, with Jones, Tovar, there's some good pieces to build around there. How good's the rotation going to be? I don't know. Can Kyle Freeland bounce back after it was just a disastrous year last year? He's going to get the start tonight against Arizona. Cal Quantrill, who's kind of a, you know, scrap heap pickup from the Guardians. He's pitched actually pretty well in the spring. He's looked good. Gomber. I mean, he's okay. And
he's winning.
Yeah, he is. And he'll battle and all the cliches, scrappy, he'll battle and he'll keep him in a game and blah, blah, blah. But I just don't know how good or how bad they're going to be. They've got to hit more home runs, particularly at home,
yeah,
which all of a sudden they used to be, you could, you know, death taxes and the Rockies being one of the top home run hitting teams in baseball. And now they're in the bottom half last year. They've been in the last couple of years.
Yeah. I like their offense. I think their offense will be okay. They had their struggles last year, but I think I like some of those young bats. I really like Nolan Jones. I think he's going to be a star for them, and Tovar as well. He's just going to be a long time major leaguer, barring health issues. He's just good. But I really like Nolan Jones. I think he's ready to have a breakout type of year. But, you know,
Brendan Rodgers. We haven't talked about Brendan Rodgers, who I think if he stays healthy, could be really good.
Yes, absolutely. So I like their offense. I think they have a chance. I think 59 wins is pretty harsh, like, to be honest with you. When you look at what they did last year, and I know it wasn't good, but that was pretty rock bottom. That's the first time they've ever lost 100 games last year. And so, you know, everybody predicts that they're going to lose 100 every year, but they haven't actually done it until last year. So if that's your, you know, your bunch of young guys in rookie core and your worst year, it's going to be at worst. It's going to be just as bad or worse. I don't buy that with the Rockies.
I agree with you.
The tough part is their division. That's the hardest part about it. If the division was a little more, you know, back to earth, then maybe those predictions wouldn't be that way. But, you know, it's hard to look at San Diego and Arizona and Los Angeles and go, they're going to be competitive.
San Francisco. I mean, they added Schnell. I mean, they've got better.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the hardest part about that, saying that you think the Rockies are going to win more games. Well, it doesn't matter. They're finishing last in this division, barring a total implosion by any of those teams, which could happen, but, you know, they're going to finish last. So
put them in the American League Central, and the Rockies could probably contend for maybe second or third in the American League Central.
And that's the thing, is they do have other games to play, right? They get to play everywhere else too, so they're going to find wins. I think it'll be tough in the division, but you know, I feel like they're going to be improved. I don't think they're a playoff contending or a breakout team by any means. Like, oh wow, look at this, we're in July and they're only five games back. I don't see that, but I do see them pushing towards, you know, 70 wins. I think they're that quality to get between 70 and 80 wins. I really think that's the case for them, but we'll see. They gotta go out and pitch it, you know. And like you said, you listed a bunch of guys that maybe don't have like the top stats and you know aren't frontline names. Kyle Freeland will be the kind of secret to their rotation. If he can come back to form, then that'll help. The other guys are inning eaters. That's what they're there for. They're not out there to shut teams out. They're out there to get you through the fifth or sixth, and that's it.
That comes back to what I was talking about with the offense. So that's where the pitchers have to keep it within two, three runs. Give them an opportunity. That's where offensively they have to get better because they're never going to go out and dominate on the mound. You have to have guys who go out and battle. We'll keep you in games. And your offense, particularly at home, has to come through. That has not happened. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, maybe there's still life left in the bat of Charlie Blackmon. Maybe McMahon, you know, had a pretty decent spring. Maybe this will be a better season for him, along with the young guys. But yeah, nobody's fooling themselves that the Rockies are going to be a wild card team or challenge the Dodgers or anything like that. My goals are modest. Don't lose 100 games. See the young guys develop. And go with the young guys as much as possible and try to instill as much of a winning culture as you can while you're going to take your lumps. And hopefully you develop, you know, some guys along the way. So I want to wrap it up. We lost our good friend Greg Wenzel a couple of weeks ago, guy that you and I worked with a lot over the years. And, you know, first off, condolences to his wife Shanna and son Bradley and Bradley's family as well. But got a memory of Greg you want to share before we wrap it up today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, just, condolences to Shanna and Bradley. And, you know, when I think of Bradley, I think of him as a kid. He's not a kid anymore. I know that. But I remember, you know, Greg and Bradley back in the days when I was coaching and coming to camps and things like that. But for Greg in particular, I would say, you know, any time we went to call a game, whether it was a road trip to Denver or Montrose or something like that, we just had a great time. Like it was always an enjoyable event, no matter what the weather was, no matter what the circumstances were. And you know how it goes on the road sometimes when you're calling games. You don't know what you're going to get from a standpoint from a technology or booth or whether you're sitting outside or what. You know, there's all sorts of crazy things that can happen. And going back and forth in Colorado, especially at the times that we tend to do it, sometimes is a challenge. And so if you're going to be stuck in the car with somebody, you know, you gotta enjoy their presence. And so for guys like Greg, it was always fun. We always had a great time. And you know, calling JUCO games and the marathon that is always, you know, kind of a similar event when you go. I'm going to spend a lot of time with these guys over the next week or two, and always had a great time. Always had the, you know, energy for the games. That's what he loved to do the most, was call games. And, you know, he was great at it and just a good friend and a great colleague over time. And yeah, just nothing but good things to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I knew him since the late 90s and we worked together for, you know, 23, 24 years. And I just remember a time we went to Las Vegas, New Mexico. Keep in mind, New Mexico, not Nevada. And to do a Highlands Mesa football game. And we're in the hotel room. And he comes out in just his tidy whities. And it's like, hey! And it was just like, that image is burned into my brain forever. Of Greg Wenzel strutting around in his tidy whities. In Las Vegas, New Mexico. Very, very... Very Homer Simpson like, absolutely, and he would find that hilarious. By the way,
if, absolutely,
yeah, that 100%. Well, Beetle, always appreciate it, man. You and the family have a happy Easter.
You as well. We'll talk to you again soon, and we'll have a great Easter, and hopefully spring is ready to get around here in the Front Range. I'm tired of snow and cold. I'm ready for some baseball work.
I'm ready for that here in the Valley as well on a consistent basis. All right, that's the Davis and Beetle podcast.
This is the Davis and Beetle podcast.